Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
Per normal, I am happy to be here. And Jeff, but what is not normal is that today's conversation is zigging a little bit. Like, we haven't had a lot of chance to cover e-commerce-related topics on the podcast. It's not that it's been the desert of e-commerce. I don't think we've ignored it by any stretch, but it's just, I think it's nice to get back there a bit.
I think so too. And, you know, as a firm that does an awful lot of e-commerce enabled web development projects for manufacturers and industrial companies, we probably see it more in our work than we necessarily do with the guests that we have on the show.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And there we go. It's, and it's a different level of sophistication, shall we say, that's required to make it happen, a different way of thinking about marketing and relationship building and selling in general. So,
yeah, no, I think today's guest is going to help shine a light on some really interesting ways of thinking about that. So, joining us today is Tyler Simmons. Tyler is the marketing manager at Energy Management Corporation. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Tyler.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tyler, thank you for joining us. It's really cool to have you on the show. I'd love to know more about the company. Let's start there. Can you tell us a bit about the firm and what you all do, and then I'll ask a little bit more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Energy Management Corporation has been around since the 70s, really narrowed in and focused in on becoming a trusted advisor on a certain range of electrical products, specifically at the moment, generators, motors, motor controls, like variable frequency drives. Specifically, we do have an online e-commerce brand that's called VFDs.com, which is a great domain if you're ever going to sell VFDs, I'll tell you that much. But that specifically focuses more on the motor control sides. We do the other products as well, but you know, VFDs, soft starters, related types of products. Ultimately, you know, there's some differences between how the two operate. Our online brand is a little more national, international, where our local brand is a little bit more regional, especially the Western United States. And so, you know, that's kind of high level of the company and basically kind of our two major brands there.
And now, just for those tuning in that may not be as acronym familiar, VFD stands for?
Yeah, it stands for variable frequency drives. So it's a motor control device. If you look at electric motors, a lot of the ways they're very similar to when Tesla invented them, I guess, or when he had his brainchild of the three-phase AC induction motor. And so there's been needed improvements in order to add some efficiency, some energy efficiency, some ways to control them. And that's really what they are.
Cool.
Man, if I had been a smart man back in the early to mid-90s, I would have bought a lot of three-letter acronym domains and just kind of held on to them. I think a person could have retired if they had a little foresight there.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, I think you're right. So Tyler, what about you? Tell us a bit about your background, how you ended up there.
Yeah, I actually started here as an intern in college one summer. I found the job listing online. A real fun story about that is my boss, the listing I applied on, he said, if you love marketing as much as Kanye loves Kanye, go ahead and apply. And so I gave it a shot, came down here and was an intern for a summer. After college, worked some other jobs and then ended up coming back. Originally in inside sales, moved to outside sales management, and then eventually over to marketing and e-commerce. So been a good path there. But I graduated with a degree in marketing and administration, so this is kind of right up my alley.
Really cool, and a nice exposure to the other areas of the firm as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think there can be a lot of headbutting between sales and marketing, and you need to be able to get through that. And I think the one place that they're married more than anywhere else is e-commerce, because you have it all happening on the same page. You got to be thinking like a salesperson and a marketer.
Do you find that your experience in both sides of the house have given you a bit of a kind of ability to talk about it in a way that gets everybody on board?
Yeah, I think so. I think part of it is you know, time at the company builds a little bit of trust, but also having talked to customers, I understand that perspective. I think some marketers can get into a trap of they don't get the feedback they should. They're not listening to voice of customer type of things. But coming from the sales side, that's all I did. It was just talking to customers. So really a big focus on what does the customer want and how do we target that? And I think it helps provide some background that really gets the team on board that, yeah, we're all targeting what the customer is looking for here.
And you've been delivering that online for quite some time now. I mean, the e-com presence is not something that's new for y'all, is it?
No. And honestly, in all transparency, there's probably a decent amount of that that is part of the success. One of the big things with e-commerce is get in early, or at the very least as early as you can. That's one of the big pieces of advice is, you know, if you're thinking about it, just start it. Time online is very important. I want to say we got the domain in it'd be the 90s or 2000s. But really they launched it as an e-commerce site, mid 2010s. I want to say 2011, 2012 ish is when they really started putting effort into that. I was an intern in 2016, came back in 2018. So for me, it was definitely, there had been some years behind it, but it had kind of plateaued a little bit. And so we had to look at how do we reinvent this and how do we make it grow again.
Where did you start when you came back to that? And now there's an e-commerce platform, but it's not, you know, growing year over year, maybe the way that you would want it to. What were you looking at first?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hardest, I think, to take a step back and look at the data. It's, you want to be a little action oriented about it. But first, you got to figure out what's performing well and what's not. Why are people buying from this? Why aren't they? And so there's a little bit of, hey, let's look at the data. Let's look at the common tools. Let's get a SEMrush, an Ahrefs, Google Analytics going and figure out where are people actually going? What are they clicking on? Where are they spending time? How are they finding us? But a little more than that, too, is, you know, I mean, especially with some of these pages where they get one or two visits, if you have enough, one or two visits a month, someone accidentally stays on that page too long, your data is skewed. So you need a little bit of a qualitative look at it as well as quantitative. And so getting on the phone with customers, one thing we do is a lot of our salespeople internally use our website, our e-commerce site, as a resource. They can check stock levels, prices, they can check documents online. So asking our salespeople, hey, what works for you, what doesn't? Being on the site ourselves, even calling some of our better customers saying, hey, you use this site a lot. Why? What do you get from this? What is useful to you? What do you wish it had? And so for us, it was, you know, let's look at the data. Let's look at the feedback and say, well, here's the things that we have found attract people and the things that keep them on our site.
And was it simply a matter of saying, okay, let's prioritize and itemize that backlog and start working through it, and it pushed you past that plateau and you started growing again? Or was there a bit of a magic moment or secret sauce there?
Revolutionary moment, maybe?
Yeah, I wish there was. That'd be a whole lot easier, you know?
You can make one up.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, we can say... We can say it was the moment that I started working on it. It just took off. But in reality, it's a slow climb. I think we have we're nearing 30,000 product listings. Article-wise, I think we have over 100 articles. We have, between our two sites, we have something like 40 webinars online. And we don't see a jump from any single one of those. It's just consistently adding content and listings that people find valuable, which... it can be frustrating. It's a grind, but at least there's a formula, you know?
Yeah, but that's really great insight, because you hear so often people, especially in the world of analytics, especially where the data can tell you a story, people will say, well, we're going to do it, and then we'll see what's working, and then we'll do more of it, i.e. we'll see the success in this one SKU that we put up, and because of that, we're going to put up more SKUs. You're kind of saying the opposite of that. You're like, look, if you're looking for that smoke signal to come out that points you in the direction of doing this more often and it's just a slam dunk, then you're probably going to miss it. And you really just need to stay focused on more. Am I getting your message correctly?
Yeah, I 100% I agree with what you're saying. That's the message here. And I think it comes back to a lot of it is if there was one SKU that would make this work, everyone would have that on their website and then it wouldn't work anymore. You know, I mean, you might find a magic bullet for a minute, but especially in this online market, you're looking at every one of your competitors all the time. You're seeing what works for them. You're analyzing it. And it really is just, you know, it's like I said, it's the work of it. It's just making sure that you're putting in the effort.
I do think that that notion of your internal sales teams using the website as the resource for checking stock levels and product information, you know, it's almost like that's a, you know, if your staff aren't using your web platform and you're doing e-commerce to this level, then that should be an indication that maybe things aren't going the way they should. But if they are using it and they're talking about it and you see them using it, my guess is that's a pretty good leading indicator that you have a good product in the e-com platform itself.
Yeah, I think more often than not, your staff, your salespeople, your customer service people will know the product better than your customers because it's what they do all day. And if they can't understand your website, what are the chances that a customer does? And so it's a really good gauge, maybe not that it's perfect, but if they're using it because it's easier than your ERP system, then I think you've built something really magical there as far as the customer interface.
And beating an ERP on UX isn't exactly the hardest task.
But an awful lot of e-com platforms are not used by the internal staff and employees.
I just couldn't resist an opportunity to take a kick at SAP or something, right? but I think that's just incredibly solid advice, you know? Like, if you can make that platform more usable than your in-house ERP is for your inside team, then chances are it's going to be really useful for customers too.
I think it is. I think the one thing that you get built in with your own employees is that they trust it. And that's the one thing you have to overcome, I think, with customers is trust. Because your own employees know, hey, this is our website. Of course I trust it. I work here. I get a paycheck from here every 2 weeks. So seems all right to me. But customers don't come with that background, with that knowledge. So that's the one piece that I think you can't gain from checking with your internal employees.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, I mean, you mentioned before that the e-com platform maybe casts a broader net than the brand itself, physical footprint does. Is the e-com platform really designed to serve completely different customers, or is it a bit of a gateway to a bigger relationship with a firm?
Let me take a shot at that and make sure I understand your question there. Because the big thing that surprised me with our e-commerce platform was there's a lot of one-time buyers that we see once and we look at it and you can say, I know I'm never going to see this guy again. This is a hobbyist in his garage. He bought a lathe at a garage store or at a garage sale and he needs a VFD to run that thing. And long-term, 99 times out of 100, there's nothing else that's going to happen there. But occasionally we'll get someone who comes in and says, hey, I'm looking at this $500,000 piece of equipment. We all know you're not going to check out online. But where does that lead in this relationship? Or certain people that say, hey, I need quick, easy pricing and stock levels on products. So your website becomes an easy thing for me to do a lot of small business. You know, like a facility manager might be saying, hey, I've got a million HVAC units I'm in charge of. I just need to be able to order these things quick without talking to someone. And over time, you want to build that relationship. But for most transactions, they just want to process it. And so there's a little bit of that side where from your question, I think you asked a little bit about scale and where that relationship goes. It's more than a lot of things. Your e-commerce site for the big stuff should become a lead source. And if they want to continue using it as their main interaction with your company, great. If not, meet the customer where they're at. Feel free to take it offline and say, hey, let's talk about how we can better support you.
And is it a complexity of solution where you find that difference or that line is drawn, or is it on size of transaction?
It's both. I think there's a certain level of, you're not checking out on $50,000 cart orders with a credit card or PayPal. But I am continually shocked that we get $10,000 credit card transactions over and over. I'm first of all shocked that people have credit cards with that high of a limit, but second off, it's just, you know, it's a lot of trust to put into a site, which I'm obviously super grateful for, and I'm glad we've built that trust level. I think complexity is a big part of it, because what I've seen is we'll get calls about, for us, we call them micro drives, basically small little VFDs, quarter horsepower, and we'll get calls about that all day because the person buying it is so unfamiliar with them. They're like, I don't know if this is going to work. And it's a $200, $300 transaction. Not in the large scope of what these can become, not a huge deal. But then we'll get people calling about the massive medium voltage drives as well. And I think it's based on their level of comfort with the products. If they're comfortable that they've got the right thing, they don't need to talk to us. So I think there's a certain level where there is a high bar, or there's a certain bar where, yeah, it becomes unrealistic to check out online. But otherwise, I think it's mostly a knowledge thing, a comfort level.
If you think about the structure of your pages and of the, you know, like a typical product on the VFD.com site, what do you think the things are that you're doing there that are helping to engender that level of trust? Like what, just sort of from a tactical level, what are you putting on those pages that you think help to elevate it and make people comfortable dropping five figures on something online?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most important things that I didn't realize was important is a picture. Having a picture gives them a really good level of comfort that they found the right thing, or that they're in the right ballpark. It can be a stock image. There are certain lines where we use the same picture for everyone, and it's a picture of the entire series of drives. We're not showing you the product by product, but there's just a certain level of, they've got a picture up, they did some work, I'm looking at the right type of thing. As far as text, I always get really conflicted internally about that one. I mean, I look at Amazon's website, and honestly, I think Amazon, personally, I hate Amazon's layout. They've got text everywhere. It's all monochromatic. It's tough to see. And yet it obviously does really well. And so I think there's a certain level of if you try to tailor it to what everyone likes, you're going to build a site no one likes. So for me, it's what is most important to someone making a decision, and how do we get that highest up the page? And so for us, we put bullet points of our technical details as the first main piece of text. It's the horsepower, it's the voltage, it's the overload rating, size, dimensions, whatever questions our salespeople get the most when they're looking at a part number. That's what we want answered first. Obviously pricing, stock levels. In our case, we don't necessarily say the stock level. We say whether it's in stock or out of stock, just to give us a little buffer room and to give us the ability to kind of look at things as they go. No one's perfect at getting orders pulled all the time, and no one's perfect on inventory. And we found that avoids some headaches, but overall I'd say, you know, those are the things that are most important. And then I think if they're willing to go farther down the page, that's where you start saying, what else could they be looking for if they didn't find that answer already? Is this thing easy to start up? Is this thing comparable to this other product? And so those are the other types of things that we've found kind of on page are important to have, but maybe not the first thing you think of.
It's really interesting, Tyler. I wonder, as you, you've talked about this in a few instances, you know, whether it's content that's helpful and helping people kind of navigate and use the products or know which one is which or which one's best for them. So I'm kind of thinking about that educational content. And you mentioned as well, like kind of hobby buyers, if you will, the people that show up and you know you're never going to see them again. And both of those kind of comments pointed me in to wonder, do you find yourself in a place where you're maybe looking to actively dissuade the hobby buyer? Like, or does it have to factor into your content planning, et cetera, to say, is what we're making right here only going to help a buyer that really, really don't want anyway? But at the same time, maybe it stops you getting 100 phone calls a day into your customer service line. I don't know. So how is that factored into your planning?
I think I learned my most painful e-commerce lesson on that topic. Those hobby buyers, they take up more time than I think. We have people that will give us a $100,000 PO with 1 5-minute phone call. And then we have hobby buyers that'll try and spend 2 hours on the phone making sure it's just right. And by the time we start looking at the time that we're spending, I almost say, like, look, I'll give you the product free if you just take it, you know, type of thing. So I looked at our salespeople, and I personally do a lot of content writing. I just like writing. So I looked at it and said, hey, we are consistently getting, on the technical side, it's called phase conversion. Single phase power is what most houses have. 3-phase power is what most industrial equipment runs on. A VFD can convert it. And there's some things you need to know. And we get just so many calls from hobbyists about this. And I said, hey, let me write an article about this that addresses these questions, that says, hey, here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to factor for. Here's some links to the exact series that will do it for you. There you go. The problem is that article became popular enough that we started getting more calls because they saw us as experts on single phase to 3-phase conversion. Rather than answering the questions without taking our time, it increased the amount of leads. And so, you know, I mean, for us, it was just kind of a, oh man, why didn't I do that about our most profitable products or our highest revenue? Like, and I've tried. I think it was just, you know, you talk about your one hit wonders, about your the magic bullet. That was it, but obviously in the wrong direction.
The entirely wrong product. Oh man.
Yeah.
But I mean, yes, but be careful what you ask for, I suppose. I mean,
the intuition seems right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Solve the problem for them, make them go away. No.
Yeah. What I learned from that was really the content and articles, webinars, videos, whatever form of content you use. And obviously video becomes more and more prominent the farther we get time-wise. But the content you produce is what makes you seem the expert. And so whatever you're talking about with your content, as long as you're knowledgeable, is really what people are going to think, I need to reach out to this guy about, to this person about. And so for me, it was, hey, let me answer some questions. But what it came off as is, hey, these guys really know this topic. And so that also on the opposite side had the great side effect of saying, well, what do I want people to think we really know? And that helps to inform the content plan.
Yeah, it's not exactly the way that you would want to arrive at that learning, but to arrive there is important nevertheless.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. And I'll say at the same time, I probably sound pretty ungrateful because, hey, it's still sales. It's still, even if it's not the sales we want, it's still a couple $100 at a time. We'll take it. I don't want to say no to it. But yeah, it was interesting that it just had the opposite effect.
So now that you're more than a dozen years into this e-commerce journey, I guess, would you, if you had to point to either the biggest surprise that the company has encountered in doing it or the biggest change they've had to make in order for e-com to be successful, choose your own adventure in answering one of those two questions.
Perfect. I'll give you two surprises. And the first one is one that's really a boring answer, and it's that you are much more dependent on the technology than I thought I would be. We were using one site to host our website for a while, and they stopped supporting the security of a certain few aspects of that. And so we had to make a transition. And so at that point it was, well, we're making a transition anyway. Should we do some rebranding? Should we do some customer interface remodeling type of thing? But it was a project we just didn't want to take on, but we had no choice. You got to keep your site secure. You got to keep it hosted correctly. So that was one thing, is, you know, just making sure you choose the right place to host it, the right way to do it. I think it's better to be up and selling and getting leads and getting sales than not. But while you're doing it, just make sure you have a plan on that. On the other side, I think that one of the big surprises that we ran into was just it. You hear so much about relationships as the key for sales. And I think that's very true from my sales background. But I don't think relationships are the start to every sale. Sometimes it's you're the only person online who listed this part number, and that's the part number I need. Sometimes it's you're the only person who explained this, and so I'm going to reach out to you even though I don't know you. And so it was how one of the big surprises there is how many large sales could come from that e-commerce store. You never think of e-commerce as, you know, large projects, turnkey projects, but that was a surprise we ran into.
I think that's instructive too, because so many people think about e-commerce and say we're going to divide kind of our catalog into just those nuisance SKUs, if you will, or they're under a certain value, and we're going to put those online, try not to deal with them or handle them with expensive salespeople. But maybe creating that separation of church and state in that moment isn't exactly the right thing to do, because so many of those smaller transactions can blossom.
I would agree. I think there's value to, hey, just get everything online. Who knows? Doesn't hurt.
Have you seen any kind of leading indicators about what might be an e-commerce transaction that's destined to become a bit deeper of a relationship? Like, are there any markers about how they might use the site, or are you tagging them in some way, shape, or form? Do they download something first? I'd love to know.
Yeah, I think if they visit our content center, we call it our learning center, your blog, whatever you call it on your site, if they visit that first, then I think there's a better chance that the relationship becomes you are viewed as more of a trusted advisor rather than a transactional partner. I would say, I think one other thing that we found that I found useful is we actually added in the ability to buy 30 minutes of tech support as an add-on, just as a separate SKU that could get added onto any product. And people who do that tend to be the ones, again, who are viewing us as a trusted advisor. And so that add-on gives me a little bit of, it's not something that typically hobbyists are paying for, because they're going to try and figure it out through YouTube Academy, you know. But people who are doing this for their job and know they need to get it right and trust us to help them, they'll add that on quite often. And even though it can be a bit of a pain to get it all lined up, it is a really good indicator that they're a good customer.
Man, that's a beautiful little strategy. That's gold. Yeah. Tyler, you buried the lead. Like, you waited 20 some odd minutes in here.
I had to make sure they listened to the whole podcast, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's just fantastic. I wonder, as we bring this episode to a close, what do you see as the biggest change or challenge on the horizon over the next 12 to 24 months for industrial e-com?
I think I'm going to give you an answer that you're probably tired of hearing. And it's AI, because it affects the content. It affects how quickly you can stand up websites. It affects how people are finding websites. You know, for years, you know, you optimized everything for Google, and then you said you were optimizing for Bing so that you could feel good that you're diversified in your SEO. And, you know, you would do other things, and obviously you'd try and be holistic. You'd try and make sure you're searchable everywhere. But, I mean, when you're dependent on people finding you through the internet and consuming your content and trusting it, AI has made it easy for some things to be found. They've hidden other things, but also it makes it a little bit harder to trust content you find online. And so how do we position ourselves as, hey, we didn't just go to ChatGPT and know the right prompt to give it. We actually know these products. We know the content. We know what you should be doing. And we wrote this, we understand these products. And sometimes I think for us, that's leading a huge shift towards video. It's, hey, here are the experts explaining it. Here are the experts showing you how to actually install or program this drive. This is something that is proving, hey, we're not an AI. We're not, you know, a couple guys in a basement just writing things out, hoping to just drop ship things. We have real experts here who are going to help you. And then obviously the other thing that I think is a big trend, and who knows where it will go, is inventory is always a problem when you've got online sales. It's a little harder to forecast because you might be sitting there and then all of a sudden something hits your inbox that some item sold. And so just really anything that has to do with supply chain, with inventory, with stocking, with purchasing, it affects the business. And that's something that's hard to forecast, hard to plan for, but ultimately really important. So not a great answer on how to address it, but it's definitely one of the things to look at.
Well, I've got to say, you're quite right when that the AI answer would be fairly common. I've got to say, I think you're the first person I've heard use video as the response to that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, I think we've only got a year or two before videos are good enough faked by AI that won't be helpful either. But
yeah, there's that. But it's an interesting content pivot in the face of these changes. Look, it's been lovely to have you on the show, Tyler. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and thanks for providing this. I mean, honestly, this podcast is great. All your past guests are great to listen to, and really appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.